Welcome to Seeking Alpha, the podcast where we're diving deep into crypto, careers, and the chaos of modern dating. I'm Larissa Bunziak.
And I'm Lindsay Poss. Together, we're two women who somehow found themselves at the intersection of crypto Twitter, Silicon Valley, and Tinder.
Welcome back, ladies and bitches. We are back in this shit for another week of Seeking Alpha. Lindsay, how the fuck are you?
Oh my gosh. I'm already counting the number of curse words. I'm so good. I am at my sister's house with my nephews, living life this weekend. It's the perfect fall weather, and it's also been a nice little break from West Virginia. But I'm gonna be honest, I miss West Virginia.
I know, I promise.
Yeah, you promised! Yeah. No more cousin jokes. Find something else to make
fun of. That was between us. That wasn't on the show. Because the audience is going to be wondering, did you see your cousins in West Virginia?
No.
That's all we needed to know. How was it otherwise?
I will say, first of all, I co-worked with my handyman because he just wouldn't leave the house. We sat at the dining room table together. Shout out to Ryan. Learned his entire life story. It was great.
Was he cute?
No.
Oh.
Oh, God, I hope he doesn't listen to this. That felt mean. But, Anyways, he also volunteered to trade me, where he could stay weekends at the cabin for work because he likes to squirrel hunt, and there's lots of squirrels in that area. And got a good recipe for squirrel gravy, which is funny because, like, I had squirrel growing up. Like, not my family, but my friend's families would hunt
it. I didn't even know that people eat that shit. Ew. Yeah. Ew. Squirrels
are,
like,
good.
Dove and pigeon. Land.
No. Dove and pigeon I don't recommend, but squirrels are fine. They're pretty good.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
For somebody who's such a lover and a pescatarian, I would not think that you are on board with eating squirrels.
I grew up in the sticks, okay? Also, squirrels, like, I will eat things that I believe deserve to die, like fish. Like, fish are so dumb. I'm just fine killing fish. Squirrels, idiots. I don't really want to eat them, but, like, someone else can, you know?
No, I don't know. No. Gross.
I, like, grew up, like, in a place where they squirrel hunted. It's not that weird to me. Doves, pigeons, squirrels, like, little game rabbit, obviously.
Win NRA sponsorship. That's what I want.
Now that I'm, like, this, like, world traveler, speaks multiple languages, blah, 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 blah. No. Like, my high school had truck parking. Like, we had tractors going through town. I had squirrel growing up. Like, I grew up in the boonies.
You're wearing camo or something that looks like camo.
It's tie-dye. And it's to cover my boobs.
So speaking of your boobs, what are they thinking about these days?
So I wanted to have this discussion because this is something that I've been, like, this is a talk that I've been having with a lot of my friends lately. And we kind of touched on this in last episode where I talked about my aunt and saying, you know, there's nothing you can do except get married. And, like, now we have all this opportunity and, like, dealing with it is tough. And so I wanted to talk about how I'm trying to deal with it, or at least trying to think about it a little more. And I've been rethinking a lot of my choices lately because my 20s were all about trying everything, expanding my knowledge base, learning as much as possible, doing as much as possible, taking initiative whenever possible, all of that. But what I'm finding out as I get older and as I'm looking for that next step in my career moving up, I need to start thinking more strategically about each of those things that I'm doing. And so what initiatives am I taking that actually get me to that next level? And I think the biggest shift in mindset for me is not needing to know exactly what I want to do or who I want to be, but thinking, is this a choice that gets me closer to that end goal of higher achievement? And doing everything is not necessarily a choice that does that. You have to be strategic in what you're doing. And so I've been rethinking how I think about my job and how I think about the choices that I'm making, even from career and otherwise, but going from I want to be successful to what specific choices that I'm making to get to that executive level one day, because that's what I know that I want. So rather than trying to be everywhere and trying to do everything, I'm trying really hard to think about, does this choice, does this thing, does this initiative actually help me move forward or get a skill? And, like, trying to build that vertical depth. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I think that's how I've operated sort of all my life. And I have a counter to what you're saying. And I thought of it because good female friends know that when you have a good friend, your cycles line up. But when you have a great female friend who are lying in bed at night at 2 a.m., tossing and turning, and then you roll over, eyes wide, and say, Lindsay's struggling, so I'm struggling, so what are we going to do about this? So I thought a lot about our last conversation where you were talking about balancing the amount of opportunities that you have and then also your longer-term priority, which is obviously having a family. And here's what I've come up with. this is radically different than what my lifelong position has been and what I think my concrete perspective is, but it's just a different way of thinking about it, which is that since we're born, literally since infanthood, everything is always about the future. Like, it's never about the now. And I'm not trying to get at the point that's really mundane, like, live in the present, whatever, because, like, shut up. But everything that's done to babies is done because it'll make them better people. Everything that's done to toddlers and, like, the schools that they go into and the activities that they do, it's so that they're more well-rounded kids. And then as kids, it's like, do your homework so that you get good grades, that you go to good school so that you get a good job, get a good entry-level job so that you can get the next job that you want, and then the next thing, and then the next thing, and the next thing. And it's like that in every vertical of life. And there's never really a focus on, like, what is going to make my life better right now? Like, what is the thing that I want to be doing today? And not because it's going to benefit me in the future, but because this is what I genuinely just feel like doing right now. And this is what will bring me joy right now. And I've been trying, I mean, and I say this, like, within, like, the last week, I've been trying to think about what I'm doing and the decisions that I'm making from more of, like, a that set perspective, because a lot of my life has been what you're describing you want to shift into. It's been, like, what is going to set me up for success? I'm not going to go out with friends tonight because I want to get this work project done that I'm excited about because I know it's going to bring me to that next level. Like, that type of thing has always been my thinking. And I don't regret any of it, but I'm also thinking, like, all of my life has been geared towards this pivotal moment of success famously. I want to be famous for a good reason. I want to be fucking rich as shit. I want to have all this shit. But then I'm like, but I'm never going to get to this point because once I feel like in a lot of ways I have reached the success, the not yet finances quite because honestly, I'll never get there. Let's just be real. I'll never fucking get there. My budgeting, shit. Everything, trash that we talked about for the last episode. It's gotten to the fucking shitter. But I'm more conscious of it now. And I know what a budget spreadsheet should look like. But will I ever do it? Probably not. But, like, I have all this stuff I've been chasing. And now I want a life partner. And I'm like, what steps should I be doing to get there? And I'm like, when I have a life partner, then I'll want a fucking mansion on the beach. What am I going to doing to get there? And it's like life is, who is it? Buddha? Gandhi? I can't believe I'm fucking quoting them. But life is suffering, and suffering is desire.
Yeah, that's
what it is. And so I'm thinking about how I can recognize that I will always want stuff, but I need to just embrace the period that I'm in of wanting what I'm wanting. And I think this applies to what you're saying because not that you shouldn't be taking strategic steps to, like, deliberately set yourself up for what you want, but when it comes to the struggle component of it and what you were talking about last week, like balancing, and it's a struggle. It's thinking about it a lot, and it's tormenting to your mind that there's this gap of, like, I want something and I don't know how I'm going to get it. But this is a point in your life where that's what you're dealing with and you can't know the future. And obviously what I'm saying is really simple, but I think there's a certain resolve that comes from accepting that there is no solution.
Definitely.
For me, accepting that or trying to accept that has been soothing.
So that's funny because there's a couple things. The first is that I'm actually trying to be more strategic so that I can take better advantage of enjoying the present. So part of it is not necessarily making every choice for the long term in terms of, like, I am thinking of every choice and how it can move me forward, but it's also about, like, doing less. I truly spent my 20s and even the past year just doing everything possible, going for everything, chasing everything. I'm thinking more so about simplifying my life rather than overcomplicating it. And, like, what are the 3 things I can do super well instead of the 20 things that I can just try and learn and see? And what are those 3 things and how do they help move me forward or make me happy in the present, to be fair? So I do want to be clear that it's not necessarily that I'm saying, like, hustle culture, like, locked in. I think we're saying the great lock-in now. We're not saying hustle culture, but, like, I'm not, like, a 996 person.
What is a 996 person? Also, I love the term hustle porn, and I love hustle porn, and I want to go on record saying that. I'm pro hustle porn.
Good. Not like, yeah, actually, you are.
To be clear, for anybody who doesn't know, this isn't a subcategory of porn. It is, like, the fetishization
she means, like, stuff. The motivational posters that are, like, grind harder. Like, yeah. That's Larissa's kink.
Yeah.
You can see it in our Pinterest, on our mood boards. Like, Larissa's is significantly more go-getter and mine is significantly gentler. So it's funny that you're like, you need to relax. And I'm like, I need to go get. 996, by the way, is 9 to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. But yes, I'm not actually that into that. And what I'm finding of as I spend more time at higher levels is people who are at higher levels actually spend a lot of time just making strategic choices. They're really careful about what they put their energy towards, and that's how they're able to achieve significantly better balance. And so that's what I'm thinking about is like, huh, I actually don't need to do everything and be everywhere, and being more cognizant of the things that I am choosing and why is going to be the thing that gets me to the next level. It's not going to be this approach where I'm like trying like 72 different things to get to that next level. And to your point, I also am someone who's like constantly chasing after like quote unquote success or whatever and highly ambitious. I also like, I came to peace with that about a year ago where I was like, that's not going to change. Like, I'm not going to reach the mountaintop. So like where I feel happy and comfortable is things that move me forward. Because, like, that's where I want to be. Stagnation, being boring, doing the same thing, that's my ultimate fear. And so I'm not necessarily chasing, like, success in the terms of, like, I want to get this job or this goal. And I think that's been the recent change is I'm, like, I'm not trying to like, check boxes or rack up accomplishments. I'm actually trying to think what makes me healthier, happier, smarter, better in my field, that kind of thing when it comes to career. And then when it comes to family, I'm trying to think, okay, obviously I lead this super nomadic lifestyle. How can I make choices that help me settle? Where do I want to like live? How do I want to balance travel, work, life with building a family, finding the right person to do that with, that kind of thing? Instead of traveling literally for 1 month at a time, can I travel for once a month? Like, can that be the change? You know, so it's like figuring out actually how to simplify and do less to be able to then move forward and do and become more. Do less to become more. I think that's the strategy that I'm going with that we just worked out in real time.
Do you want to do less because doing less you will like?
Yes, I like having a routine and being at home.
Oh,
I think that's actually what I've learned from being in West Virginia. It's funny because doing the same thing every day is boring, but having a daily routine is important to me. Like, that makes me really happy. So, like, strong body is really important to me, and that's easier to achieve on a routine.
Okay, so it's settled. You're moving to New York, finding a stable place, and living one spot. No more nomading.
I was waiting for that. I will also say I did recently realize that a lot of my choices are motivated by grief. Losing my mom at a young age, like my sister said at one point, my mom died in my 20s and I've been trying to figure it out ever since. And I definitely like feel that pain. My mom, I was 20 when my mom died, and that's a really weird time in life to lose someone who I was lucky enough to have a mom who was very much a rudder on the ship, helped me steer, you know, she was my best friend. That grief affects me. And then the grief of having a marriage that didn't work out. And then the grief of having a relationship that didn't work out right after that, like just so much grief in my mind. The other night I was like, okay, you have to stop making choices because of grief. Like, that's a thing that I need to work out and work on. And I do think that not living out of a suitcase all the time and not knowing what time it is ever, your body does suffer when you're jumping across time zones.
Oh, fuck yeah. Oh my God. I take so long to recover. Every trip that we take together, it takes me a week to get back to normal. And you're already on the next trip.
Yeah. I mean, I'm blessed to have traveled as much as I did, and I'll never discount that. I think the flip side is, like, it's hard, you know? It takes a toll on the body, takes a toll on the mind. Makes it hard to build and develop relationships, various ones, friends, family, romantic, even work. Makes it harder across all personal relationships. So I think figuring out how to do less so that I can do more is the...
Okay.
Maybe the path forward.
Okay. I like that. It's interesting because when I was describing my hesitancy to start anything serious, because I'm always thinking about forever, like, do I want to be with this person forever? And you were like, it's either going to work out or it's not. So why worry about it? I think we're opposites in that way in relationships, and then opposites in this way in our approach to day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm giving you your advice.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of fun to have it flipped.
Yin and yang, bitches.
That's right. Always keep them guessing, too. Never know which one is which.
They have a good idea of who's going to be on what side of things.
We should do that at the live show. We should do, like, who said this?
Who's worried about this? Who's struggling with this? Who muttered, ass motherfucker, cunt ass hoe? Lindsay.
Yeah. Who used the words DP?
Lindsay.
And who wanted to melt into the chair and die after that?
Not me.
Yeah.
It was producer Pat.
Well, in addition to careers, we're also here to demystify the world of finance.
We're demystifying ass bitches casting spells on you hoes.
That I want to put on a t-shirt.
So, a term has been thrown around recently by Lindsay, and I'll be honest, I had no idea what the fuck she was saying when she said it, but all I did was nod my head, which is pooled investments. I put contextual clues together and realized it is probably a pool of money that is invested, but I did not actually know what it meant. And then I took a higher level view and realized I don't know what financial products actually are. Two seasons in, having spent a lot of time talking about the substance of them, but not on a definition-based level. So we are going to take a step back and talk about what the fuck are pooled investments? What is equity? What is debt? Etc., etc. And we're going to do these by male archetypes because, you know, that's
who we are.
The world is male run and what we're doing. So here we go. First, equity products. So equity is the guy who you go on a date with and then immediately he is giving you a drawer at his apartment. You sleep with him and then the next morning you are on FaceTime meeting his mom. He asks why you didn't tag him in the pics that you post of meals when you were just using him for the dining out. Equity is basically cuffing season with the company. You get to be a part owner and you get certain perks. Sometimes that's money in your pocket, which is dividends, and sometimes it's a say in how things are run, which is voting rights. Within equity, which is the financial product, there are a couple different types. Some of the most common ones are common stock, which is the basic bitch package. This is what you can buy on Robinhood. This is what you get if you're an early employee at the company. You get common stock. You get to name drop the company, which is hopping into an Uber and saying, yeah, bitch, I'm a shareholder. You get to get a say in big decisions if you have enough shares, which none of us do if we're buying on Robinhood. These are like the major fucking investors, huge shareholders. And occasionally you get paid for sticking out the long haul, which is dividends. Aside from common stock, there is preferred stock, which is being a favorite side chick of the company. So you don't get a voice at the table, but you get treated better financially. You get a fixed payout, a higher claim on the company if shit hits the fan, and it's the quiet luxury energy. You were selected probably because you're an early investor. Private equity is what venture capital is a form of. You get exclusive access to the happy hour and after party, and you can't just walk in. You need connections, you need cash, you need the patience to wait years because often it's locked for a while. So when you're deploying private equity, you're betting on a company before they're hot, before anybody knows if it's going to do good. Often it's before they have product market fit, which is fucking insane. But it's very high risk and high reward, and bragging rights if you called it.
Wow. First of all, I didn't know what preferred stock was. I think it's funny that you're like, this is the guy that cuffs you, and you're like, he wants you to have a drawer at his place, and he wants FaceTime with his mom. And that's like so funny because your fear of commitment is showing. Instead of just being like, this is a guy that wants to date you, you're like, he's all up on you.
And when I'm ever in a serious relationship, I'm going to call you and be like, Lindsay, this bitch is holding me hostage.
Yeah, I know.
You literally just agreed to date me.
Yeah. In my mind, I'm like, yay, equity. And in your mind, you're like, oh my God, it's someone who wants to commit to me.
Yeah, bitch, long term.
Okay, yes. So now that we have equity covered, going to cover debt. So debt products involve money provided by a lender to a borrower. It could be auto loans, personal loans. It can be you loaning a friend money at a 0% interest rate and just being a good person. But a lot of us are super, super familiar with that. And because of that, the archetype I gave this is the Rock. This is an extremely traditional, reliable man who prioritizes stability and security. He shows up at work at the same time every day. He pays his bills on schedule. He drives the same car for 10 plus years. He never surprises anyone, good or bad. And then, every once in a while, one of them is actually insane. And that's where you get the Sam Bankman-Frieds of the world.
I was going to say that. So this is a school shooter.
No. Well, I was kind of thinking that a little bit, but like we should cut that out just because too much shooting news lately. You have a significant majority of these loan products running in a pretty standard operation, as in car loans, auto loans, personal loans, even small business loans. The investor can be a corporation, it can be a government, it can be a bank, it can be anyone who actually gives out a loan. Typically, the win for the person who is making the loan is that the borrower agrees to pay back that loan plus some form of interest. Lots of times it can be fixed interest, sometimes it can be variable interest. For the borrower, the win for them is the immediate capital. So hopefully a lot of people are familiar with mortgages because people have them. But maybe. That is one example.
Not today.
Some people have them in West Virginia. It's me. So what happens when you take out a mortgage is you'll say, I'd like to buy this home. The bank will say the home is worth this much. We're comfortable giving you the money to buy the home. In return, you're going to pay back that money plus interest on the loan. And that's how you're able to buy that home up front and then slowly pay off. Because not all of us are walking around with the cash to buy 100% of a home. In fact, basically no one is walking around with the cash to buy 100% of a home at any time.
And but if yes. You are, call me because I want to date you.
Larissa's looking for her house on the beach. I want yes. There's also treasury bills. These are short-term debt instruments issued by the government. So they have a maximum maturity of 364 days. Typically, the government will issue treasury bonds to, again, get that immediate cash flow. These are seen as a very stable investment. So the government gets that money in from the treasury bonds. They then use that money for all kinds of programs, and then they then pay back bondholders that money plus a little bit of interest. These are typically super low interest bonds, but that is also because they're seen as one of the most stable loans a person can give. So that's the basics of it. And then there's a certain subsection that is extremely high risk loans. So it is that stable guy who all of a sudden does something that you're like, where in the world did that come from? And it can be good or bad. Like it can be like really tragic, or it can be like, oh, he got a pilot's license and all of a sudden he's flying to Bermuda every week. And you're like, never thought that guy would do that. So it's that kind of guy. But yes, this is the vanilla. This is the vanilla choice of financial instruments is a loan.
What is considered a super high risk loan? Is that the high interest rate ones?
Yeah. So poor credit scores is like one way. Of course, as with every financial product, it gets more confusing the more you get into it, because there are a whole bunch of businesses that will actually specifically buy risky debt. So companies that go into bankruptcy, things like that, they'll buy the stock for pennies on the dollar and then basically take a gamble that that company's going to turn it around and that stock's going to skyrocket and they will make a huge payout. So that's like an extremely risky debt product where you're going in and you're buying actually someone else's debt for a discounted rate. And then you are betting that that debt that you bought is someday going to be worth more than what you paid for it. So this, going back to our FTX example, this actually happened. So obviously FTX was worth over $1 billion. Lots of people invested, lots of creditors, lots of people lost money. What happened was lots of people went in and bought that stock for pennies on the dollar of what folks paid for it. Like I'm talking ridiculously low percentage of the value of the stock of when it was purchased. And then what happened was FTX actually made a huge investment in Anthropic, which blew up and was able to satisfy 100% of its debt obligations. So that stock then became worth exactly what the people had paid for it, but they had sold it at a massive loss to these debt collector companies. So obviously when that works out, it's a massive payoff because you're paying sometimes as low as 3% of what the stock was worth. So that's a super risky investment.
Got it. Okay. So it's typically considered risky for the lender, but less so for the borrower. Unless you're borrowing from the Yakuza, and then the risk is very much on you because you're going to pay.
Correct. Yeah. You should probably know who you're borrowing from, but lenders themselves, that is the reason why background checks, credit scores, those things exist for when you take out loans.
Okay. So now we are all experts, intermediate on debt. Moving on. Derivatives. Derivatives are the sugar daddy who makes you sign a terms agreement before your first date. So,
oh, dream relationship, by the way. I'll sign that NDA. I ain't gotta talk.
Yeah, but you also gotta do some physical stuff too as part.
Oh, back out. Damn. You had me at the money.
Derivatives don't really work that way, because once you're in it, you're locked the fuck in, Lindsay. So now you get a sugar daddy who you gotta do physical stuff to. But you got your NDA.
Summer Walker out here. Yeah.
So a derivative is a contract. Its value comes from something else, like a stock, a bond, commodities, could be wheat if you're into farm or core finance. Oh, if you're Lindsay now in West Virginia. But people use them to hedge risk or bet big. And within derivatives, there are a couple major types. First is options, which is like a situationship. So you don't have to do anything. There's no commitment, but you just have the option to. You can buy, which is a call, or sell, which is a put, an asset at a predetermined price within a specific date range. So there's a deadline. It's like commitment optional. You can go big, go low, whatever, but ultimately it's an option because that's what it's fucking called. Futures and forwards are the other kind, which are like grouped together. And these are marriages. These are contractual. This is your sugar daddy terms that Lindsay has signed her hands and mouth and orifices away with.
Ew.
Before I even got to that part. So read your fucking contracts, Lindsay. You and the other party are agreeing to a deal at a set price in the future, obviously. And futures are public and standardized. They're traded on exchanges. It's like being official on Instagram. And forwards are more private and custom between two parties. They're like a sneaky behind-the-scenes door. Behind the door. Behind the fucking scene, whatever. Nobody sees them. Nobody sees this shit on forwards. Only you guys know about it. But it's that you'll cash out at a certain price. And you can win or lose depending on how the asset actually does.
Derivatives, when I learned about them, were my first inclination of like, huh, money is not real. Nothing is real. This is all fake. And people have been building up a glorified and complicated system of gambling that they pretend is super important and that they pretend the world runs on. And I'm like, wow, we all talk about Wall Street as if it's a sophisticated game. And it is a sophisticated game, but it is a sophisticated, degenerate, lying ass game. It is not real.
That's why they gotta wear suits to work. So they right. create an illusion.
It is so play pretend. And derivatives, options, futures, forwards, all of it. Super play pretend. Now, in some derivatives, there is an actual really big advantage to it. So derivatives started with the Chicago Stock Exchange. It was a way for farmers to guarantee certain prices of their crops. So that's what futures contracts were. It was like, here is the wheat that I am going to produce this year. Buy it up front now at this price, and then I'll give it to you when the wheat actually comes in. And the government actually was buying a lot because that helps hedge against really weak crop years, and it also helps prevent inflation during really strong crop years. So either way, the price imbalances of up and down crop years was really harmful to someone. And so futures are actually a hedge against that, where like prices can be more fair and balanced. And the government actually does step in and buy quite a lot of crops at specific rates to hold those markets a little bit more steady. So those serve a real purpose. You have oil futures, you have all kinds of futures now, all kinds of commodities are, everything is listed. Like the weather is a thing that you can bet on now. So obviously this has gone from a way of stabilizing an economy in a smart way to provide consistent price models year over year and prevent from price difficulties to like full-on degenerative gambling. Options are a thing, like when people are getting into investing, I'm like, literally don't even ever touch options. They actually require calculus, like actual calculus. Like they're so confusing. Stay super far away from them. Futures can kind of get down with. I think there's actually a place for them. And one other derivative is Forex, so arbitrage between different currencies, which I can also kind of get down with. But options, I'm like, options are the devil to me. I'm like, ew, stay away. I don't want you. That's for someone else. That's for the degenerates to gamble on. That's not for me. All right, moving on to insurance. I am using this as a chance to call back to one of the first people that I slid into the DMs of. Early listeners will know it's Jake from State Farm. Oh. He's our insurance guy.
Yeah. Okay, check that out.
And I feel like he's a good insurance guy because he probably has a will written, which everyone should do, by the way, using this segment as a reminder that everyone should have a will. I don't, but like all of you should. But yeah. So this is someone who is always prepared for a situation, who shows up when you need it, who is just generally aware of what could go wrong and how to fix it. So that is Jake from State Farm. And this one is a little bit more familiar. Insurance are financial products that provide protection against events and losses. So this can be life insurance that provides a monetary benefit in case you die to someone that you elect. It can be your car insurance, your home insurance, your health insurance, all kinds of insurance. Then we also have annuities, which are financial products designed for retirement that provide a series of payments over a specific period for the annuitant's life. So a retirement account is really like self-insurance. It's you making sure that you have money that you can live off of when you are no longer working. So that's the insurance category. It's just rainy day funds. You put money away. You can then draw upon that pool of money when something happens that is covered by that fund. So one could call insurance a pooled investment. Not quite. They actually are different products, but I wanted to throw that in there. But the concept is the same. Everyone pays into a big pool. That pool gets dispersed out depending on who actually needs the funds.
Well, that's insurance. So next and last, we got pooled investments. So pooled investments are the fantasy football ringleader. He pools everyone's money and emotions for seasonal chaos. He's the one with the spreadsheets at the bar. He turns grown men into crying toddlers watching games. And Lindsay, somehow I feel like you're involved in this. And
I just know that you used AI for this because there's not a shot in fucking hell that you were looked at this and thought fantasy football. Yeah, not only sports, but like sports on top of sports. Like this is second layer of sports that you're talking about here.
You know what? I was once in a fucking fantasy football league, so I take offense to this.
I'm not saying you can't participate. I'm sure you participated in likely the same way that I participate, which is me and my sorority sisters during a fantasy league every year, forgetting about the draft, auto-drafting, and then forgetting to make picks every game, and then someone wins. But, like, there's no shot you looked at pooled investments and thought, you know what I can relate this to that I'm really passionate about? Fantasy football.
You know, okay, so my thought was originally the Hamptons house guy, or Jersey Shore.
Thank you!
It's the Jersey Shore house guy. It is the guy who invites you over for a Jersey Shore rendezvous weekend, and then you show up, and you got soggy ass, butt-smeared towels everywhere, and gym socks, and 10 other girls who you don't know, and 50 guys. Mm-hmm. That is pooled investments as well. That's the non-AI version. There you go.
Thank you.
That's to say, pooled investment vehicles combine money from multiple investors to create a larger, diversified portfolio, and they are managed by financial professionals. The financial professional in this archetype example is the fantasy football ringleader, Hampton's House Inviter. And there are a bunch of different types, but the ones that we will go over are as follows. Mutual funds. This is the vanilla grouping. It is the most basic. Your money gets spread out across a bunch of different assets. It's safe, it's steady, but trades only settle at the end of the day. So it's boring, but it's dependable. ETFs, same idea, basket of assets, but it's way more liquid. So you can buy and sell them like stocks during the day. Think of it as like the fun cousin of mutual funds. Same DNA, same idea, but cooler, more flexible, more liquidity, etc. And you should know liquidity from our past episode. Mm-hmm. Hedge funds are not something that everybody has access to. You have to be an accredited investor, and it's typically elite, invite only. So think of it as like an after, again, another fucking after party. Finance loves its exclusive ass after party shit, and that's why we're creating crypto, which is another conversation. But it's where the strategies are intense, the entry fee is high, and the vibe is basically like, don't ask questions. Because the hedge fund managers employ these sophisticated trading strategies to use this pooled money and ultimately make a huge return. It's exclusive, it's risky, and designed to do extraordinarily well, unless it blows up, which sometimes they do. But the thought is like, you know, just keep deploying that fucking cash and eventually it'll work out. So not something that the average listener can get involved in, but it's probably the type of guy that you'll see a lot on Hinge and Bumble.
Now you finally know what pooled investments are. When you said I don't really know what a pooled investment is, I was like, wait, do I know what a pooled investment is? But I would have said mutual funds or ETFs. So it's like... Yeah. It's somewhat the language. I think for me, I was super intimidated by finance for so long because I thought all of it was unattainable to understand. And then it turns out, like, they're pretty attainable concepts that we all interact with in some ways. We take out mortgages or car loans. Derivatives are a little iffy, but we work for stock and companies, you know. So derivatives are really the only one that's kind of hard to force. I know. I feel like I always talk a big game about that, but when it comes down to it, I would feel so uncomfortable with someone just lavishing money on me.
I would love to hear some sugar daddy stories. If any of our listeners have, please write in and give us them.
Wow, what a good call to action. Yeah, drop your sugar daddy stories in the comments or in a DM.
So should we get into what we like?
I, for the first time, bought extra full fat Greek yogurt. 2% is like the fullest fat, but I bought 5% fat Greek yogurt. That shit is so good.
Okay, interesting, because I recently mixed no fat and whole milk yogurt in the same bowl. And I was like, oh my God, is one of these expired? Because they taste different, but yeah, full
this
fat
like
is better.
Barely has like any tang. It's like eating fluffy, delicious, creamy yumminess.
Interesting. Okay, good to
it's
know.
So good.
Okay, so I like these compression packing cubes. I have been iffy on packing cubes in the past, mostly because my strategy is never to like pack by categories. Always just haul a bunch of shit into how small of a cube I can fit it into, and then call it a day. But recently, I started organizing shit by product and actually using the compression mechanism, and damn does it save space, and damn is it fucking organized and easy to use when I get there. It really makes a difference in travel. Like,
the danger with them is that it's very easy to go over 50 pounds.
Yes, that too, but that's another problem for another day. Come to our fucking live show. October 22nd, New York. If we don't see you guys there,
I will be so sad.
We'll be sad.
Like, I'll be sad. Larissa will probably curse at you, maybe. We'll work on some spells to cast together.
I will not a spell. I'll cast a fucking hex over a cauldron.
Oh, she's so serious. All right. Listen to Seeking Alpha. Don't get hexed.